नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta Prayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyuttama Shloke Bhaktim Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in the most transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 28th day, of November 2011 in Gainesville, Florida, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, entitled The Prayers by Queen Kunti, text number 25. Okay. Everyone have a book? Vibhadak santatak shashvat tatatatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yaksyad apanar bhavadarshanam vibhadak santatak shashvat tatatatra jagadguru Bhavato darshanam yaksyad apanar bhavadarshanam vibhadak santatak shashvat tatra tatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yaksyad apanar bhavadarshanam. Vibhadak santutak shashvat tatatatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yaksyad apana bhavadarshanam vibhadak santutak shashvat tatatatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yaksyad apanar bhavadarshanam vibhadak santutak shashvat tatra tatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yaksyad apanar bhavadarshanam vibhadak santatak shashvat tatra tatra jagadguru do darshanam yaksyad. So I'll just read the synonyms, you can follow along. Vibhadak, calamity, santu, let there be, tha, all, shashvat, again and again, tatra, there, tatra and there, jagat guru, O Lord of the universe, bhavataha, your, darshanam, meeting, yat, that which, syat, is, opunaha, not again, bhavadarshanam, seeing repetition of birth and death. Translation. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Report. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive, who have performed some pious activities, worship or begin to worship the Lord. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme due to being misled by the illusory energy. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nations, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hoofs of a calf. Such persons are meant to reside in the abode of the Lord, and they have nothing to do with a place where there is danger in every step. This material world is certified by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger, and there is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshurun midatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. Here, Queen Kunti, having reviewed some of the calamities and dangers that she had been through with her exalted sons, the 5 Pandavas, is now expressing a truly remarkable sentiment that she wishes these calamities will happen again and again. Now, I've never actually been able to pray like this. I don't know about you, but this is extremely advanced prayer, that one will actually pray for danger so that one will call out to Krishna in helplessness and in this way remain completely within his protection. But this is her sentiment. So just to review a little bit some of the previous verses where she enumerated some of these calamities, from the very beginning, when the Pandavas were orphaned, a Pandu was killed, so they were placed under the care of Dhritarashtra. Now, Dhritarashtra was Pandu's brother. He wasn't really suitable to be the king because he was blind, although he was the elder son. So the understanding was that the kingdom would be held in care until the Pandavas were grown and could take over the kingdom. But naturally, this created a difficulty, and Dhritarashtra's sons, headed by Duryodhana, wanted to usurp that kingdom. So this is the tension set up in the Mahabharata. And Duryodhana, being who he was, and Dhritarashtra being weak and controlled by the love for his son, there were all kinds of schemes to murder the Pandavas. The poisoned cake, the fire in the house of Lack, the war itself. They were planning to annihilate them. When they went out in the forest after escaping from that burning house of Lack, they had to face the Rakshasa, Hidimba. You know, and Bhishma killed him. You recall, wonderful pastime. So this is all going on year after year. Then there was the cheating of the dice game, and they had to be exiled for 12 years and 13th year, live incognito. This is all a tremendous difficulty, which they didn't deserve. They were the rightful queen Kunti. She was a queen. She was a princess. And they were the rightful heirs to the throne. But due to the machinations of Duryodhana and company, they had to suffer all these. Now here she reviewed them, but now she says, let them happen again and again. And then very poetically, Bhavatu darshanam yaksyat apunar bhavadarshanam. So why is it that she says that by these dangers, we will see you? Well, because, and Prabhupada, as he explains in the purport, when there is some danger, a devotee of the Lord naturally calls out to Krishna in helplessness. Right? We know the so many instances in the Bhagavatam, Draupadi was being disrobed, right? And she trying to help herself, you know, but who, how could she possibly, you know, stop Dukshasana, powerful Maharati? You know, so finally she gives up, her hands are up, Krishna, please save me. Right? And he saves her. You know that story, wonderful story provided on the Sari. And there are many instances like that. Gajendra is helpless. Pallad, you know. So you see that the great devotees in the Bhagavatam, almost all of them, they're put into great difficulty. A test is given, and then they pass the test. How? By taking complete shelter of the Lord. So in this situation of danger or difficulty, the natural tendency of the devotee is to take shelter of Krishna. And this is, it illustrates a very important point of bhakti. And that is that everything depends on the intensity of our focus and the intensity of our emotion by which we are calling to Krishna, the holy name. And that's why the next verse, I don't want to trample on whoever gives verse tomorrow, but they go together. And the next verse speaks about how one becomes disqualified from calling on the Lord with deep feeling. Janmai Shraya Shuddha Shiva Edamana Malak Puman Naivaharti Vidatam Dvai Trama Kinshana Gocharam. The word abhidatam means to call out or address. So Kunti is saying those who are too intoxicated, attached to these four general categories of opulence, good birth, wealth, education, and beauty, physical beauty, personal beauty, they can't call up onto the Lord with deep feeling. And Prabhupada talks in the purport, he says, anyone can chant Hare Krishna, and it's good. Everyone should chant the holy name. But there is a quality to the chanting. And the quality is what we're trying to cultivate as if we're practicing bhakti seriously. And that's why there are all these rules and regulations. And in the process of Vaidhi bhakti means under rules and regulations, they're meant to guide us on the path and not let us get deviated by attachment to these four things or other deviations we may have. So that, just like in Florida, I live in San Diego. Now, both of these places are, like, materially quite nice. Weather's nice, you know, the beach is there, like that. Right? So this is Maya's trick to make us forget that this is this danger at every step, that this is a place of dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It probably refers to this. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam is in the Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, where Krishna says, mamo peche puna janma dukkhalayam ashashvatam. That if one attains to me, no longer does he have to reside in this place, this material world, which is full of misery and very temporary. Well, moment by moment, Maya is trying to make us forget that and put us into this dreamlike state where we think that we can enjoy this world, we can enjoy these senses. And even as devotees, we may fall into that illusion or into that mood, and the result is procrastination. We don't take seriously the need for striving right away, as quickly as possible. I live in California. Now, one of the things California is famous for, of course, the beaches and Hollywood. And people like to forget, there's also the earthquakes, you know. And the earthquakes are, you know, there's all kinds of difficulties in this world, like hurricanes. You have more hurricanes. Of course, in South Florida, it's much more prominent, where I used to live also. At least you get some warning. Right? Okay, you know, even watching that map, and they're coming, okay, batten down the hatches, maybe we'll flee the coast, whatever. But for an earthquake, there's no warning, you know? You're going along nicely, you know, on the beach, and suddenly, boom, boom. I remember I was sitting in the temple. We had on the second floor. This was in 94, I think it was. And it was a big earthquake in the high desert, in Joshua Tree. And, suddenly I felt like I was on a surfboard. You know, and then I ran out of the temple. I'm still on a surfboard. The whole sidewalk is going like this. Now we didn't. There was no serious damage, but suddenly it makes you think. Well, at any moment, you know, we could go. And now we've been reminded, although it's been a danger all along, about the danger of these nuclear power plants with the thing in Japan, Fukushima. You know? I mean, they didn't expect that. People are living there on the coast so long, everything's fine. Suddenly, 9.2 earthquake, huge, you know, big tsunami comes and spewing out all of this radioactive dust. Danger. I live 40 miles from another big one built right on the beach called San Onofre. And, you know, it's right in an earthquake zone. They build it right on the ocean, literally practically stepping in the ocean. If you drive to L.A., you see it on the left. And if there's a big earthquake and that goes, all of San Diego will become uninhabitable. All of a sudden, a big exodus. And, you know, there's already traffic jams. You can imagine everybody trying to leave at once. So the point I'm making is that one way or another, we're always facing danger in this world. And we need to be hearing that repeatedly, because Maya and modes of nature tend to put us to sleep to that reality. And the result for a devotee is that we're meant to call out constantly to Krishna. This is why it's Kirtaniya Sadahari. What is that essential verse? We all know it, that Lord Chaitanya said, hang it around your neck. Trinavdapi sunichena tarodiva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Now, if you think about the first idea here, trinavdapi sunichena, we're meant to feel that we're you know, as insignificant as a blade of grass. Now, blade of grass, you know, anyone can walk on it. There can be a little fire, and you get burned up. You're truly helpless in that position. And so we call out to that, and tolerant. Now, tolerance is the next thing. So we're meant to be as humble as a blade of grass and as tolerant as a tree. Tree is the kind of the example of the tolerance. As Krishna explains to his coward friends as they're walking through Vrindavan. Look at these wonderful trees. He's giving the trees as examples of munificent personalities. Now, real munificent personalities, like pure devotees, they tolerate all difficulties in giving the most valuable thing. So what does a tree do? It just stands there. It gives the fruits, it gives the flowers, it gives the shade, it will even give its own body. The axe man will come and cut it down, right? Never complains. Just standing there, tolerating. So that's the standard. The great devotees, they put themselves in a position. They go out of their way, you know, in order to give Krishna to the benighted souls, the fallen souls, ignorant, because this is their only shelter, but they don't know it. And in the process of doing that, they undergo so many difficulties. You have to be tolerant, right? Your Prabhupada did it. All the great acharyas did it, right? And Prabhupada wanted us to do it. Book distribution, go start a temple here, preaching in, you know, Florida. You know, Florida's not any really any safer than Russia. But he wanted everyone to go all over the world. And he expected that from his disciples and his followers. But there's another kind of tolerance, which is perhaps more pertinent to our present discussion, and that is tolerating the siren song of Maya. That's another kind of tolerance. That's why when Krishna's, this famous tolerance verse, maybe some of you know it, Matra sparshastu konteya shitoshna sukadukada agama pahino nityas tamtatikshasabharata. So he's saying there that the contact of the senses with their sense objects inevitably produces happiness and distress. He summarizes heat and cold, pleasure and pain. Now, sukha dukkha, why does one have to tolerate? I can tolerate the dukkha, I understand that, but misery. But what about the sukha? That's something to tolerate too. You know? But that's precisely the other side of the coin. Because that's Maya's siren song. Trying to say, you can have the sukha without the dukkha. And when the dukkha comes, oh, we have all kinds of means right, to push that back. You know? And as Prahlad Maharaj says, dukkha aushadam tadapi dukkham. The very aushadi, the remedy for the dukkha you try to employ, causes more dukkha. Look at this, there's a problem with air pollution, right? Caused by burning too many fossil fuels. Most of it burning gasoline and so many things, and for energy, heating and everything. Okay, so we'll come up with the electric cars, right? Electric cars. So then you need more nuclear power plants or whatever. You know, then you got to burn coal. You got to burn something. In other words, down the road you find that you've created a worse problem for yourself. Or look at the medical industry. Now this is part of Maya's trick, is that more and more technology is always growing, right? So there's a whole thing of medical science. And they'll invent some machine or some drug. How many millions and even billions of dollars did they put in trying to find a drug that will counteract this certain disease? Okay, so then they have the drug or they have the medical device. But it's very expensive. So they have to get their investment back. Right? This is all capitalism. This is, you know, they're not doing it because they want to cure the disease. They want to do it because they want to make money. So therefore, they have to charge so much money for a device that's used only a few times, you see? So the medical cost in a country like America, which is, after all, just trying to push back disease, trying to counteract disease, is skyrocketing, even constantly. And it creates a huge problem. Then you go into debt. Debt is another kind of misery. How do we solve that? Oh, we'll just print money. Yeah. Then you have inflation. You see the problem? Yeah, it's like pushing down on the rug and then it comes up on you. So that's dukausha tadabidukam. And the illusion is, Prabhupada mentions here, that you can counteract the dangers. You find a safe insurance industry. It's all based on fear of danger. Fire, death, disease, theft. You can't count the ways. They try to scare you. You see an advertisement in the magazine or whatever, you know. Lawsuits. Right. That they scare you and then you buy the insurance and you'll be safe. Oh, now I feel safe. So that's the illusion. So here she's saying just the opposite. Let these dangers come again and again, because by these dangers we felt completely helpless in this world and we had no shelter but you. See? We always have no shelter but Krishna. But we feel it when there's some danger. And so the intelligent devotees, the sincere devotees, they put themselves in a situation. This is where tapasya comes in. They voluntarily put themselves in a situation where you need your Krishna's help. You're helpless. When Prabhupada landed on the pier, those prayers, you know, those wonderful songs, he says, you brought me here for some reason. You know, how am I going to make them understand this philosophy? Well, you make me dance. You make me dance. You make me dance. This famous line, right? In other words, Prabhupada felt completely helpless and dependent on Krishna. And in that mood, that's the mood of a pure devotee. That's complete surrender. You know the six principles of surrender? Did we study those? Anukulena sankalpa patikulya savarjanam rakshishatiti vishraso gopdhidvevananantata apanakshepta karpani shadvanashadanagati. So the first one is to accept everything favorable for devotional service. Now that in itself is a big surrender. Oftentimes we'll accept A, B, C, and D, but when it comes to E, F, and G, I don't know. Maybe, you know. All right? And then you have to give and you have to give up those things unfavorable. And then again, there's A, B, C, D, but not E, F, G. So we're making kind of compromises. So real surrender is everything favorable. You know? And and then there's the rakshishatiti vishraso gopadbe. This is exactly what she's talking about. Rakshishatiti means complete confidence that Krishna will protect. And then the other one is Krishna will maintain. This is the corresponds to yoga kshema. Yoga are the things that we need to live. That's the gopadbe, for maintenance. Krishna will provide the food, he's providing the air, providing the water, he's feeding the insects and the animals. Why won't he feed us? Prabhupada makes this point. So, and kshema means welfare. Krishna says, personally, I will carry it for the surrendered devotees who only think of me. You see? So, this is the elements of surrender in Queen Kunti, the pure devotee, being fully surrendered. She is taking this role for us. She's expressing this for our benefit. This is how we should pray. Now, the interesting thing is, there's another verse that Prabhupada quotes in this purport. He doesn't quote the Sanskrit, but he quotes the translation. It also deals with danger. So I'll give you that verse and we'll meditate on it, because it's a little paradoxical and interesting how these two things work. So this is this first famous verse in the 14th chapter, 10th canto. Samashrita ye padapallava plavam. Does anyone know this? Mahapadam punna yasho morare. Bhavambudi vatsa padam 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 yad vipadam natesham. Just see the poetry. Padam padam vipadam padam. So there he's saying that samashrita, one who takes full shelter, we're back again to this shelter and surrender, one who takes full shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, Padapallava Plavam, which are like a boat. They're a very secure boat, Plavam. For what? For the ocean of birth and death. We're all in it. But we're forgetting that. We're swimming nicely in the ocean, taking a vacation. But we're in danger at every moment. We can be swallowed up, by the Timangila fish. So, Mahatpadam Punya Yasho Murare. So whose lotus feet, he defines it. Mahatpadam has two meanings. One is he where everyone, all the Mahatmas, take shelter at his lotus feet, or the place where the entire Mahatattva rests, in other words, the creator of everything, and whose glories are themselves productive of punya. Just hearing about Krishna, just hearing his holy name from the right source, immediately you get punya, not material punya, but bhakti punya, that which awakens bhakti. And who is it? Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon. It's Krishna. So what happens if you're on that boat? Bhavambudir Vatsapadam. Bhavambudir, it's an ocean of birth and death. Big ocean. But it shrinks down to what can be a little water puddle in the hoofprint of a calf. Not even a cow. Just the sense of humor here. Not even a cow. It's not even a cow, but it's a calf's hoofprint. And you can easily, as far as it, leap over it. Step over it. Now, not for them who have taken shelter is this place where it says padam padam yad vipadam. This word vipadam is in this verse, right? But not for them is it where there's danger at every step. Now, if you're on that boat, then you're safe from the danger, so you don't have the sense of danger anymore. You see? So here she's saying she wants the dangers to come, so she'll have a sense of danger and call out to Krishna. But actually, as soon as you call out to Krishna, there's no more danger. So it's one of these, a chincha beta beta things. There's really no danger. It's a dream. Prabhupada says it's a dream. But as soon as we feel that there's some danger, we should call out to Krishna and the danger will be gone. It reminds me of when Dhruva was fighting the Yakshas. He went a little bit overboard, right? He started killing all the Yakshas. And then they started throwing their spells, and all these big mountain comes up and you have a big hurricane and a flood and it's throwing down blood and pus and all these nice things. And what to do, it's very bewildering. So the who is it? Kuvera? Did Kuvera come? I think it was Kuvera. And they advised him, you just chant the name. Chant the holy name. And all of these, these illusions will dissipate. And he did it, and they dissipated. And then he started again, and they had to come down and quiet him down. So you're killing too many rakshas, yakshas. One of them killed your brother, and now you're killing the whole race. So he did that. But the point was, is that the holy name itself, that's Krishna, right? We have that faith. That's Krishna himself. And dissipates all sense of danger and fear. And that's why it said that for the pure devotees, they don't have fear. They see heaven and hell as the same. Now you can imagine. So why is that? Because if you're not in the bodily, all these dangers are coming to the body, right? The body is a very fragile little instrument. At any time, it can be injured or diseased or destroyed. We know that, right? So, but we have this illusion, false ego that I'm pretty strong. Like we were at the football game Kirtan the other night. I've never seen so many people in one place, at least not for a long time. And it got kind of scary, just when it was getting to be 7 o'clock and everyone is rushing, suddenly there's like 1,000 people in front of you, and half of them are drunk. They're all in that mood, the football mood. One guy, he looked like a football player. He came, he was kind of annoyed that we were blocking the little area, And so he came right through the middle of the party and spread the devotees, And I was like, this is danger here. They're like, this is a dangerous place. I felt like when Durasan came to Mathura, with his huge armies, and Krishna came out with his little squad, and Balaram. And of course, they eventually killed them all, but the ladies were up on the parapets, and they're saying, oh my God, Krishna's a goner. He's been swallowed up in the ocean of the army of Durasan. But we had the holy name, so we were protected. But it was like that. And suddenly, I suddenly had this sense, if all these people start moving in one direction and you happen to be the direction they're moving in, there's nothing that's going to stop them materially, That's what happens with a mob, like that. And then, the game started at 7 and you heard that roar, preternatural kind of beastly roar, the kickoff came and you say, my God, this is the mode of passion and ignorance personified. And this is what's going on in all over this country. You know? So there's danger. But taking shelter of the Lord dissipates the sense of danger, and one feels protected. Now I wanted to part of it is that Krishna's in his name, right? He's not different from his name. And I wanted to share with you something you may have not heard before. We've heard of the 10 offenses. And maybe, I don't know how often you recite them. In San Diego, we recite them every day. So the second one is that to think that the names of the demigods are equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu, right? So such as Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. Now, this is coming right from the Sanskrit. I won't get into the intricacies of the Sanskrit. But if you recall from the Upadeshamrita, you probably studied that, where the second verse, Atyahara Priyasascha, and then there's the word Niyamagraha. So it actually, there's six, but it actually expands into seven because there's two meanings, right? Double meaning. So the same thing is true. That happens often in this verse. So that there are really 12 offenses, not 10. And I'll explain the two that we don't often meditate on, but it's important. The way this verse is constructed, this word, I forget the Sanskrit, but it says, Shivasya Namnam. The first thing is about Shivasya, which can mean the name of Shiva. You know, you shouldn't think that, or the auspicious name. Shivasya can be the auspicious name of Krishna. Shiva means auspicious. So, you know. And then near the end of the verse says, Diya Bhinnam. Now this is the key word, Diya Bhinnam. Let's just take it apart. So Diya means to have the mentality or to think. And Bhinnam means separate. Okay? So, but the way it's, the Sanskrit is, it could also be Abhinnam. Diya Bhinnam, when the word is together, the way the Sunday works, it could be Diya Abhinnam or Diya Bhinnam. You see, so there's two meanings there. So the commentators explain. And the word Shivasya also has two meanings. Now, theoretically, you get four, but one of them doesn't make any sense. So you have three different meanings there, and you add that in, and you get 12. Now, the two that we don't usually understand is that the idea that the name of Shiva is, or Brahma and the other demigods are equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. Now, there's actually two different offenses there. You see? We usually merge them together. So one is to think that the name of Shiva is independent of the name of Krishna. Meaning that, yes, we'll chant the name of Krishna. We want to get love of God, or we want to get whatever. And we'll chant also the name of Shiva, because Krishna doesn't give everything. Shiva also gives other stuff that we need. So we better chant the name of Shiva. And you see that all over the place. What about Ganesh? Don't ignore Ganesh. He's also a separate personality. You see? So this is the Diya space Bhinnam. To think is separate. Maybe not equal, but separate. Then there's the other one, which think that there's no difference. You can chant Shiva, you can chant Ganesh, you can chant Durga, you can chant Krishna, you get the same thing. You see, there's a slight difference in meaning there. One is that you have to cover all your bases, and you see sometimes you go to this hodgepodge Hindu temples, no offense to anyone. But, you know, I've been to them. I was in Winnipeg, and they had, when the devotees were chanting, trying to bring some purity. And they got everybody covered. You know, there's Ganesh, there's Durga, we had Lakshmi. Narayan, and several others, you know. And so, and everyone's singing different songs like that. This is an offense to the holy name, to think that they're equal to or independent of. So there's two there, equal and independent. But then the one that is most important, that we don't think about it in this context, is that the holy name of Krishna is Diya space Bhinnam, is separate from him. In other words, not to remember that the name of Krishna is Krishna himself. That's an offense. So when we're chanting the rounds or chanting in kirtan, that understanding should underlie us, that we're able to associate with Krishna by his mercy, just by chanting his holy name. You know? If Krishna walked in, you know, this door with the peacock feather and the flute, we think that was a pretty special event, wouldn't we? We probably, hopefully we would hit the deck. You know, and start a big kirtan, whatever. You know. But he's walking in. He's entered, you know, in the holy name. You know, and he's giving everyone a chance. This is Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Krishna as Lord Chaitanya making himself available. So when you remember that, then the chanting of the holy name becomes that much more meaningful and profound to you. The danger is that the mind is the enemy. You know, the mind is forgetting that there's danger. The mind is maybe thinking to thoughts of Janmaishraya Shuddha Shibir, you know, and this is affecting how we chant, because everything rests on how we chant. In fact, I've heard it say that, I haven't heard this personally, that Prabhupada explained, maybe someone can give the reference, that all the other services that we do are really, the fruit of it is in your improved chanting. Is that Krishna gives you, when you serve, he gives you the ability to become absorbed in the holy name and taste for the holy name. It all comes to fruition when you sit down and chant your rounds, and the mind is attracted to hear the holy name. Whereas you can probably have realization of this if you do some nonsense, you're not strict, you do this, then it comes time to chant, you can't think of the holy name. Krishna's not giving you that blessing. You're going back, you're thinking of this, thinking of that. Let me chant, because you see that you're going in two opposite directions. One is you're praying for service, and then the other time, they just rejected service. You can't go 180 degrees separate. So this is why, Krishna consciousness is a total program. Is that at every moment of our waking day, there is a Krishna conscious way to do something, and a non-Krishna conscious way. And we've all experienced that. How we have to bring the mood back, and try to gradually or quickly, however we can do it, cut out those things which are, we know are nonsense, and which affect our relationship with Krishna and with the holy name. So that's more or less what I have to say on this. Akinchana gochanam, just this one word. These wonderful prayers, probably love these. Akinchana gochanam means that he can be approached by those who are material exhausted, who don't regard anything as their own, He can be literally like that, and you see the Babaji's or you see the six Goswamis walking around in Vrindavan, and they don't even have a place to call their own. We're a different tree every night. Not even this is my tree. No, different tree every night. And the Kopan you find on the floor, nothing. That's a Kinchana. Now, Prabhupada was also a Kinchana, but he had palaces everywhere. He had beautiful dhotis. He had all these things. So how is he also a Kinchana? Because he saw everything. And everything that came into his control, he used for Krishna. And this is really a more important way of being a Kinchana in this day and age. Because that's what the preaching movement is made of. We use the facility that we can bring it into Krishna's service for propagating his glories and bringing more people into the service. This is Lord Chaitanya's mission. Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya. But the Vairagya has to be there. Cultivate the detachment, dispassion from the things. And that's cultivated through the regulated process of devotional service. So we should remember, Bhagavatam is full of descriptions, or we can just look in the newspaper, at all of the dangers in this world. We know that, But we've also been given the way of living in this world of danger in such a way that we can ultimately leave the world of danger. Everyone else is forgetting the dangers, and they're trying to enjoy, they're trying to counteract whatever dangers there are by material means, and they're ensuring their stay in this world of misery. So this is a basic principle of devotional service. Why do what we do? Two reasons. People move mostly, through, there's impetuses, motives. Love and fear. Two big impetuses. What is terrorism? Terrorism is trying to instill fear to make people act in a certain way, or stop acting in a certain way, right? But really, we don't want to be moved by fear. That's the impersonalist. Fear of birth and death. Oh, let me get out. The hell with everyone else. Let me just get out of this world. That's Prahlad says, I'm not like that. I'm going to stay in the cities and the towns and try to give them you, Lord Nisringa, Krishna, because there's no other shelter for these people who are trying to enjoy in this world. So that's the mood of the devotee. And we recognize the dangers of this world, but we navigate our way through the instructions of Shastra, Guru, Sadhus, in such a way that we can feel that we're protected by Krishna, and that we use as much of Krishna's energy and Krishna's service as possible. That's a Kinchana, and Krishna is pleased with that. And then you don't develop attachment for these things, but you develop attachment for Krishna through whatever we can employ. So that's the mood that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to cultivate, and that's the whole central mood of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. On the basis of Lord Chaitanya's instructions, chant the holy name, cultivate knowledge of the Bhagavatam, come together, associate, live in a holy place. You know, it's fortunate to be able to gather here and become purified so that we can feel dependent on Krishna, call out to Him at every moment, and feel protected. So, thank you very much. We'd like to open it for any discussion on some of these points. Yes, Prabhu. Well, okay.
The first one is about the verse directly, where Queen Kunti says, "We see Krishna directly." Because we see Krishna directly. And you were talking about the holy name being non-different from God. Similar to that, their philosophical concept. But Krishna was actually right in front of Queen Kunti. She was playing for these calamities, but he was actually right in front of her. It wasn't just a philosophical concept.
Right. But the drama of this moment is that he's about to leave, you know. So what he's saying here is that when we were separated from you, and we were in all this danger, we meditated on you, we called out to you, we felt dependent on you, and we saw you in the heart. We felt your protection. You see. Now I'm seeing you directly. Please don't leave. I mean, that comes in. Please don't leave. You know. She wants it to stay, you know, that's the mood. But of course he has to leave. But she's saying, okay, let those dangers happen again. Because we will see you, in our hearts as immediately and as personally as I see you here. It's a mood of, what is it called? Purva Raga. Before separation, there's a sense of separation, imminent separation when you love someone. You know, oh, they're leaving. You know, that sets up a certain tension. So she's saying, okay, to mitigate that, then let us have so many dangers, because we'll feel so dependent and call out to you that we'll see you again. That's the idea.
The second one is being dependent on Krishna to protect us or maintain us or whatever. It's not really him keeping up his part of the bargain I'm afraid of. It's more of my own karma or results of my own activities that I'm so afraid of a maintenance, or I guess he does. It's not the material body he's talking about. It's the soul he's talking about.
Yes, of course. But the body is, it will fall eventually. Everyone, you know. But the idea is that the great fear of the devotee is of Maya, of forgetting Krishna. You know, Prabhupada told us, the problem with you Americans is you're not afraid enough of Maya. You know, and we could say for all the devotees, you know. We have to be very afraid of forgetting Krishna. That's the real danger that the devotees feel. And all the other dangers will be taken care of. But, you know, to really feel that danger means that you have to be, in the fire of devotional service. And you also have to feel that, oh, you know, this is now distracting me. Let me kick it out, you know. And Krishna, please help me. This is where the position of prayer comes in. These are the prayers of Queen Kunti. She's asking for something. You know, the main prayer that I feel is in the second to last one, you know, which I put into a little poem, which I'll say, you know, Twayme, does anyone notice? Twayme ananya vishaya mati madapate sakrit ratamun bahatara dha gange vaugamadanvati. O Madhava, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee, not any other kind. As Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to thee. So that, you know, that first prayer, I made a little slogan out of this. You can take it. I haven't copyrighted it. How's it go? First comes mati, then comes rati. Which means, because those two words are in this verse. So there's really two divisions here. First she's saying, the word vishaya means different things. In the Gita, it's also used as a subject matter. Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas basically deal of the subject matters of the three modes. He's saying, Arjun, be transcendental of the modes. Don't worry about the Karmakanda section, he said. So here, the same word is used, Vishaya. Twayame Ananya Vishaya, Matir. Oh, let my mind, Mati, be absorbed in thoughts of you, Twayi. Not Ananya Vishaya, not other subject matters. And then she speaks of Rati. Let my love flow toward you like the Ganges flowing to the sea. Can't be stopped. So we're struggling with the mind. But the wonderful thing is that Krishna is not a passive object there. He's active. When our mind is on Him, when you just focus the mind on the name Krishna, and the Hare Krishna mantra, or any direct in the form of Krishna pastimes, service, Krishna, He responds to that focus. So many times in the Gita, He says, "Oh, one who is always thinking of me, always absorbed in me," you know, and you feel emotion, you know, it comes up automatically because Krishna is active. There's a shakti there; it's awakening your ability to love. Yeah. So the whole struggle, especially in the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti stage, is to focus the mind on Krishna in so many ways. We have the senses, you know, the puja, the activity, the thing, the serving out the prasadam. Preaching is the best way. Trying to convince someone that they're not their body, read the Bhagavad Gita, is a tremendous absorption of Krishna consciousness. You're thinking of Bhagavad Gita, you're trying to help this poor soul, you know, you're serving Krishna, Krishna's responding. You know, that's why, you know, this is a preaching movement. Now, anyone can do it. You know, I mean, so, but the main thing is the mutti, the mind is on Krishna. And then when it comes time to chant Hare Krishna, you know, pure Krishna consciousness, you're more enlivened than the kirtan. You're more able to be absorbed. Krishna's giving you that. So that the prayer aspect, you know, there are many other prayers. Maybe we won't have so much time. Go ahead, give me your third question.
The last one is about the suffering. In a dream, but even in the dream, you know, the suffering is very real.
Right, so. Right. Because the suffering is like a mental thing. In other words, you know, the mind is disturbed, and you're identifying with the mind and the body, and so you're disturbed. This comes up again and again in the 11th canto. We're reading the Uddhava Gita in San Diego, and again and again, that is like a dream. Dehasto in the dehasto vidvan swapna yato tataha. Like one awakened from a dream, the wise soul sees the truth. Though dwelling in the body, he's entirely aloof. The foolish soul, however, though he's transcendental too, sees the body as himself, as if the dream were true. And see, that's where we're all at. We're trying to wake up from this dream. So yes, when you're in the dream, it's as real as anything. We're dreaming we're born. We're dreaming we're, you know, getting old. We're dreaming we're dying. And it's very, very real to us. You know, it might as well be real. But then we realize it's only a dream, but you have to act on the basis of reality. That's the thing. If you act on the basis of the soul, then you can actually, you know, watch the body working. Like in the fifth chapter, oh, watch everything opening and closing, you know, I'm doing all this. But body's engaging, you know, but it's not, that's not me. You know, and if I, you know, something happens to the body, that's not me. The point is, there's no emotional investment. That's where the suffering is, the fear, the anxiety. You know, take a pill. You're next. You forgot. Oh, they're in the back. Okay, we're out of time. Okay, we have 30 seconds.
So sometimes when we
okay,
when we have difficulties, like when someone have when devotees have some service and then like things go wrong and service not being done properly. Then, like, what should be the mood? Like, should we think, like, oh, I should be a responsible Vaishnav and should try our best to do this service myself? Or otherwise, like,
just leave it up to Krishna. If he wants the floor swept, he'll inspire me to sweep it. Since I'm not inspired to sweep it, then Krishna doesn't want to sweep. Perfect syllogism, right? You find that sometimes, you know, those are the Hindu persuasion, no offense. You know, when Krishna says to surrender, I will surrender. He hasn't given me, you know. He says here, Sarva Dharma Padichaja, but he's speaking to Arjuna, he's not speaking to me.
How is it different from Lord Kunti's mood that give me calamities
So you're back to your original question. Of course, we should try to do the service as well as possible. That's bhakti, you know. And the reason why, you know, it doesn't always work that way is because we get diverted. We don't have the motive of making money, you know. The thing is, the whole world is moving on its selfish motive. As soon as our devotion slackens, then our internal motive for doing any service is slackening, right? So what do we fall back on? Sense of duty. The sense of duty is essential. It says, oh, okay, I don't want to do it, but I should do it. That word should isn't, you know, the animals don't have should. There's a moral imperative. I know my spiritual master wants me to do it. I know the devotees will be disappointed in me. And Krishna will be disappointed in me. Okay, I don't want to do it, but I'll do it. You know, and not just do it, but do it right. You know, do it as well as you can. And it's, so yes, we should. The whole idea is that the bhakti comes out in how the service is done. You know, accept the sense of doing the service, and then how it's done. Like somebody, I heard that somebody in London, they've been cooking Mangalarti sweets for 40 years, you know? And they're legendary. Someone comes back, oh, you should see. There's all this artistic thing on the sandesh, and it's melting in your mouth. Heavenly takes you to Vaikuntha, you know? This is a simple, you know, morning sweets. But the bhakti that's been invested in there, you know, is evidence in not just how it tastes, the subtle, you know, but also the perfection of it, you know. So relating to this is on a different platform. This is a whole different platform. That's why I'm saying I can't pray like this right now. You know, we should read these prayers and worship Kunti. You know, now the other one we can pray. That's why you may an undivisha. We can definitely pray, Krishna, please don't let me think of anything but you. That's why I put that one into a poem. I didn't put this one into a poem yet. Okay, any other discussion before Kalakanta comes back? Yeah.
Is Krishna only acting in the lives of the highly advanced devotees, or is he just acting in all of the devotees' lives? Like, is it immature or wrong to think that Krishna is, like, to see, like, his hand in our lives?
No, not at all. He's acting in everyone's interest, and he cares for everyone. And as soon as, Prabhupada said many times, as soon as you begin devotional service, Krishna takes special care. That's why we shouldn't, you know, the karma is all rearranged. This is the only way. The only way is through bhakti, to actually negate your karma, to wipe it away. You can do atonement, but you still have the seeds of a sinful desire, and they eventually come out. You know, this is in the sixth canon, read chapter one, you'll see it in the story of Ajamil. So, Krishna is very caring. He says, oh, they chanted my name? You know? What about the Upadeshamrita? Krishna eti yasagiti tamana sadriyeta. Someone who chants even one name of Krishna. You know, we went to the football game, oh, sorry, Krishna's. You know? He said, well, one should offer obeisance in the mind, at least. So, oh, this person's chanted Krishna's name. So, Krishna does take care. But oftentimes it's quite a, you know, struggle to become a devotee, to become a serious devotee. There's so many distractions, so many things. So sometimes when we see our material life in difficulty, we shouldn't think, you know, that's something independent of Krishna. This is actually Krishna's mercy, you know. This is Krishna making us a failure materially. Prabhupada saw it that way. You know, he was a pharmacist. You know, he had his whole business. And he tried to make a lot of money. He had the idea that, I'll make a lot of money and use it for Krishna. You know? But it didn't work out that way. You know, he kept striving and striving, and then he finally gave up, and he saw that this was Krishna's hand. He didn't want him to make a lot of money. He wanted to do something more glorious than that. You know, and do what he did. So even as neophyte devotees, we can try to see Krishna's hand in things. You know, the worst thing we could do is to try to blame Krishna for not giving us our material facility that we think we deserve, you know, in order to serve him nicely. This is kind of an illusion. We don't know what our destiny is in Krishna consciousness. You know, I had no idea. I just joined in New York. I've been moved all over the country, you know, and who knew that I was going to live on the beach for 30 years, you know. And it's ironic, it's almost a joke, because I hate the water, I don't go with swimming, you know. I lived in Miami for 12 years, I went swimming 6 times, I counted them. I've been on the beach, literally, Pacific Beach, 2 blocks, 22 years, I haven't gone in once, you know. It's a joke. Where people, they come from all over the world to go, say, and go to the beach, you know. And I see the sufferers, I call the surfers, probably call them sufferers. You know, hauling the boards down to in the morning, you know. Well, I'm going to Mangalarti. See you later. Anyway, we should see Krishna's hand in our lives, and we should pray that he'll take charge of our lives, you know, whatever, good or bad. Okay, we better end there. I'm going to get into trouble. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Hare Prabhupada. Hey. Gangel Bhakti House Ki Jai.